You're listening to the Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life and Dash Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show, hosted by Ball is Life. I'm your host, Roosh Williams, with my co-host, Zach Noble. And today, we have a special guest in the building, former front office man and assistant general manager for the Brooklyn Nets, and currently a Twitter capologist and more. Mr. Bobby Marks is in the building. Bobby, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Doing great.
It's just another day. My dog accidentally ate a marijuana edible yesterday that did not belong to me. And so yesterday was a wild, wild ride. It was like straight out of a movie, unfortunately, but he's okay. He's good.
I feel your pain. I went through I have a Pomeranian, a rescue dog, and I felt like we went through this period, like this 3-month stretch where she took a bite of an onion, which I didn't realize was probably one of the more dangerous things.
Very toxic.
That you could,
yes.
She ate Easter candy. Chocolate, yeah, but not, you know, I mean, there's worse things probably.
For sure.
And then the kicker was she ate sugar-free gum, which has an ingredient in there that, yeah. So she basically got her stomach pumped for like 3 months straight. And she was a regular at the ER, but she is she's alive and kicking and stuff. But yeah, it's funny once they get a hold of something, they don't really care.
It's insane, man. We had someone staying at the house that had one that I just didn't know that they had one. They had a backpack unzipped and, you know, he's a little 13, 14 pound dog, nosy, yeah, snooping around, and he got to it. But the thing was, he got to it before we went to sleep. So okay. I had no idea. I just woke up and my dog and I were spooning as we typically do, right? But I
Roosh, when Roosh opens at that store, I was wondering where you're going to go, Bobby.
When I move him in the bed, he usually like gets up and finds a different place, but he wasn't moving. And I was like, this is not normal. And I looked at him, eyes rolled in the back of his head, and he was just couldn't stand. Anytime I took him out to pee and he just laid down and went to sleep.
Oh.
Anything I did, he just laid down and went to sleep. Funny thing though, when I took him to the hospital on the way, he was slumped over in the passenger seat, just stoned as a brick. And I was at a stoplight next to a Chick-fil-A, and the aroma from the Chick-fil-A got him, right? And so he was just out cold, couldn't move, and he smelled that Chick-fil-A. He got right up and looked out the window, and I was like, okay, that's my guy. So
that's some real California stuff right there.
There you go. But he's doing all right now. Good. So all's well, and we're good. But regardless, there's a lot to talk about in the NBA. And so, Zach, I think you had something you wanted to kick it off with.
What do we want to kick this off with? So I kind of wanted to go into, being you have the front office background, March Madness is happening right now. Do you still follow the draft closely? Do you think you have a good grip on the draft? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I usually say like, you know, my time right now, a lot of it spent, I'm in my writing phase, yep, where pretty soon in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start pumping out these off-season team articles. So it's like, I'm in my, you know, I'm focusing on writing. Of course, I watched college basketball. I watched a tournament. Am I up to speed where Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz are? Probably not right now. I usually play catch up, leading up to the, you know, the up until the draft, just because I'm on the show. All right. So there's a knowledge there. And then the other thing I do also is that one of the things I help prospects prepare for the draft, you know, so there's a part there where I am helping them with their interviews, through various different agencies here. So, I mean, we kind of know the names, right? The kind of the big, I guess the, whether it's Chet Holmgren or, you know, Jaden Ivey from Purdue has kind of, you know, flourished onto the scene, and Jabari Smith from Auburn. So there's, you know, there's certainly the bigger the names are out there, but yep, you know, we'll start hearing, you know, as this tournament goes on, we'll start hearing more names. I think the one thing you have to be always cautioned for is that you can't get wrapped up what goes on in the NCAA tournament. I think it's part of it, the scouting process.
Okay.
I just think that there are so many case studies. Malachi Richardson, I always think of him, the kid who played at
Syracuse. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, like who had a good tournament and then gets drafted, I think, by Sacramento, I want to say. And then, you know, basically it was a, you know, three years or 4 years, and we never really heard from him. So I think it's part
is that
of
more Sacramento though, or is that Malachi Rich?
I think it's a little bit of both probably. Yeah. I think you just can't get, it's part of everything, right? Like how do these guys react in an elimination game, right? Part of the process here, that we're watching. Yeah. I mean, if a guy is a surefire stud and he's lighting up a tournament, yeah, that will certainly help them a long way.
Definitely. So I appreciate you sharing that background. That's interesting to know. And I'll tell you, my top 10, I'm feeling pretty confident as we go. And it's always interesting to hear the more draft people I talk to about how much they value the actual March Madness, because it can be one game. It can be six games for some guys. But yeah, I mean, it's the biggest stage they'll ever be on. And they should be at their peak of the year. So, I mean, it's got to mean something. And you definitely see the Malachi Richardsons, the Derek Williams from Arizona back in the day. My Timberwolves really screwed up Kyrie Irving there. And I mean, the list goes on. But for me, I mean, I think the tier one this year is more clear than ever. There's four guys for me: the Chet, Jabari, Jaden, and Paolo. What are your thoughts on those guys? Is there one you have above? Do you have any order at all you'd like to put them in? That's just kind of where I thought the last few drafts, it's just been a clear number one.
I mean, I think you're right on. It would have been interesting if Iowa would have made a nice run here, right? If you know, Keegan Murray maybe jumps into that conversation a little bit here. They win the Big Ten, they get eliminated in the first round. So that would have been a name that I think he's in probably in that next level, that tier B. Would he have maybe jumped in there? I think it's going to be fascinating just because the teams that are going to be picking in outside of Cleveland, of course, it's going to be a lot of the same, you know, familiar faces here. We're going to see Detroit. We're going to see Houston again. And as far as what, you know, usually it's always about drafting, you know, best available. You know, we've got some bigs, we've got a guard here. You know, what happens if Jaden Ivey is staring at Houston, right? And what do you do with Porter Jr. and DeAndre?
I can answer that.
I need him and Jalen next to
you. Go ahead, give it to me, because I just actually just finished writing. Well, I'm not done with their offseason article. I wait until, you know, that we're heading towards the end of the season. And like, one of the big things for me is Porter Jr., right? Like the more you watch him, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, being a guy who grew up in New Jersey and down at the beach and on the Jersey Shore with the boardwalk, it's like my Kevin Porter Jr. feels like is like those boardwalk games, right? You spin the wheel and you're like, you don't know what you're going to land on.
You don't know what you're going to get.
Like, you're going to get a great pass, top of the key jumper, or some fan in the front row is going to get hit in the side of the face with an errant pass, right? Like, I don't know, like, you know, so like, and he's extension eligible, right? Like, do you have enough body of work? Do you trust the player? There's so many different factors in there. And I think that's going to be the interesting dynamic, is if some of these teams that went big last year, or if it's, you know, Detroit with Cade, there's like fascinating where it's almost like who they pick is a domino effect, right? You always don't want to, you just want to pick best available, and then you worry, right? Like, what happens if one of these bigs are staring at Detroit and you've got Sadiq Bey and you've got Jeremy Grant, you know, you've got guys already kind of in position there. That's the beauty of the draft happening before free agency. And that's probably a discussion that we could have another time there, where you're filling a need and then you're going out and filling a different need in, with free agency.
So just a quick,
as a Houston guy, I'll say I value Jaden Ivey over Kevin Porter Jr. The volatility of Kevin Porter Jr. on a night-to-night basis, and then the mental toughness is not there and I see it. I mean, I watch all 82 of the Rockets, Bobby. If you see me on Twitter at all, I do a lot of Rockets stuff. And I mean, one night you'll get, and it varies quarter to quarter. I mean, he'll start a first quarter, 8 points, six assists, no turnovers, hitting the three ball, looking great. And then he'll disappear, or he'll randomly roll his ankle. He's been doing this a lot lately. He'll just roll his ankle and kind of get out of it. He'll get subbed out. This happened the other night. He got subbed out, got upset about it, forced his way back in the game. It was really awkward to watch. And you can just tell that the maturity and mental toughness is not there. Or if it is, it just varies night to night, quarter to quarter. And if you're really trying to build a winning culture and a winning team and winning habits next to young guys like Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, and so on and so forth, I don't think you keep a Porter around unless I think his best chance to flourish, at least with respect to his current situation, is as a sixth man, a la kind of like a Caris LeVert. I mean, he's inefficient. He has big games. He also has poor games. The one thing is his shooting's become better. He's shooting 37% from three on about six attempts per game. And so, it's 6.3 attempts per game. So he's shown some improvement. I don't want to give up on it, but he's about to hit restricted free agency. And I just don't see many suitors for him. So I think the Rockets.
There's a big difference. You know, when Houston made the trade with Cleveland, you know, they basically took back, you know, what, like 1.5, 1.6, you know, like he's on a rookie contract. And the funny thing with Porter Jr. is that he didn't even get, you know, you can, when you do these rookie scales, you can get, there's a base number and then you get 120% bump. Mostly everyone gets it. I would say 99% of the first round picks get this 120% bump. Porter Jr. didn't get that. Like he basically got, you know, a couple million less than what he could have earned. And there's a difference when Houston trades a top 55 protected second round pick and inherits a guy in a $1.6 million contract to paying him like real money, like 3 years, $36 million, like that. And I think what you have to be careful with is A, do you have enough body of work? And then B, if you ever had to move that contract, can you trade him? Like that's the big thing. And that's where you're hesitant. And all rookie scale contracts, unless you're, you know, Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell and these big names and Trey Young and guys who get deals right off the once free agency starts, right? They're locked up to these max deals. Like there's a reason why a lot of contracts don't get done until that Monday before the start of the regular season, right? Like those in between guys, because you really don't have much leverage. Players don't have much leverage in extension talks because the team is not bidding against anybody, right? They're not bidding against an offer sheet. They're not bidding against cap teams with cap space. They're really just kind of bidding against the clock on that that Monday before. So let me
stop you there then, because it plays out in the public like the player has so much leverage because they all get these extensions besides DeAndre Ayton, who might have deserved it as much as any. Like I've personally been on the side where you have all the leverage, like you're saying, the team does. So why not say, prove it one more year? Who cares if that player's mad? You're going to be able to pay them more money.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, too. Like Michael Porter Jr. is, we're on the Porters here, so we'll go Michael Porter Jr. now. I mean, he's an interesting, great third year, right, in Denver. We know the history of the back coming out of Missouri. And then he gets, he gets max. He's a max player. And the fifth year is partially protected, but there's clauses in there where if he earns all NBA or based on how far the team goes, will kick in. But he has surgery again. You know, the same, like the back flared up. And that's another case where if you're thinking like, well, why don't you just tell, prove it.
Right.
Like, give me another year at that, especially had a...
Are teams just scared, you think?
Yeah, I think what teams look at too is teams are still freaked out from the Gordon Hayward situation in Utah. That was like 5 or 6 years ago, where maybe even longer, where Hayward signed that that offer sheet with Charlotte at the time, and it was for less years, had a player option in there, and a couple years later, Utah he opts out and he goes to Boston here. So I think there's teams that are scared, somewhat scared of that. I think eventually the qualifying offer comes into play where, you know, teams don't want to lose a guy. So he'll sign a 1-year deal, become an unrestricted free agency and restricted free agent. So, but I think just with this landscape, this offseason, like Detroit, San Antonio, Orlando, Indiana, Portland, those are your kind of your cap space teams here. So I do think you had more leverage here. I mean, going forward, it might be different here, but yeah, there always has to be a give and take on rookie extensions, right? Like Kyle Kuzma is a good example too. Like when Kuzma signed his deal, I think it was last year. Like it was 3 for 39 or 3 for 36, whatever numbers. Well, it's a good number, but on a trade off, he's got a player option, right? So like they had him on a good number, player option. It works for both sides here. So. But it is a fascinating dynamic as far as, the team's got leverage, but all of a sudden we see like 8 deals happen, right? Like right as soon as that weekend happens, right before the season starts.
So I want to use that to kind of naturally segue into, I think, what we want to focus on talking about today, because that's pretty interesting. And I think you would be probably the best person to sit down and have that conversation with. So I kind of want to focus on young cores around the league. And, we can evaluate them, discuss them, whatever you want to do. And since we talked about Kevin Porter Jr. and since I am biased to the Houston Rockets, let's start there. What are your thoughts on the current young core? Who do you think is included in Houston's young core? Because half the team is, may or may not be legally able to drink. And who do you, see them, at least in your eyes, who would you add to the young core with what should be, hopefully, another top 4 draft pick this season?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think Green and Sengun, definitely, I think they're part of the core. I mean, we talked about Kevin at length here. So do you want to equate him there? I don't know if I'm ready to, I don't consider him a foundation piece. The other two,
I agree.
I think you can build around that.
Well, I think it's interesting because they have Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood.
Yeah.
Christian Wood is 26, but he's
right.
He's really, it's a second real season.
Right.
And they are the leading, they get the most touches and they get the most usage, but they're also the most volatile and the biggest question marks.
Well, and that's the other thing with Christian too. I have a lot about him is like, he's extension eligible. Right. So are you comfortable giving him a 4-year, $70 million, $80 million plus deal? To build forward, or what happens if you draft a big, possible, so I think I know he's putting up numbers. I know the game the other night, he goes for 39 and hit 7 threes and stuff like that. But like I want to see it like
more.
I give Detroit a lot of credit how they're playing right now, because although they've been eliminated a long time ago, like I want to see guys in meaningful minutes when games matter. Like I don't want to see it when you're down 20, and certainly Houston's played better since the All-Star break, but I want to see guys in meaningful minutes. And before I'm willing to commit like these buku dollars to a guy like Christian Wood. And I think the interesting date for me for Wood, is going to be, I think, August 6th. And why I say that is because like once that date passes, if he's in play to be traded, that team won't be able to extend him because of this, the 6-month restriction as far as, from that perspective here.
Can you elaborate on that for people that aren't familiar? Are you saying that he cannot be, if he's traded after August 6th, he cannot be extended by the team that trades for him?
He can be extended, but he can't be extended for the maximum amount, which is 120% off the average player salary. So it's basically he's getting extended, 5% off his current number. So the maximum amount that Houston could have given him or a team that acquires him in, July is different compared to after, that August, that August 6th date. So I think that's going to be interesting as far as what they do, but, they've got 2 picks, the Brooklyn pick, is going to be around 15 or 16, or maybe something.
Yeah, it's looking good.
Yeah. Something happens and somehow they're sitting at home when the play-in is over. I don't think that's going to be the case. But yeah, I mean, you've got two picks. You've got these younger players here. I just think the one thing the West is teaching us is that, like, this is going to take a while, right? Like, this is like,
it's fair.
Guys are going to, you know, Porter Jr. and Murray are going to be back in Denver. Kawhi and Paul George are going to be back in Los Angeles, right? So I just think you got to hit on your draft picks, man. Like, that is so key. And I think you did what you did last year. I mean, even, you know, Christopher, I like, there's parts there. It's just a matter of just, you got to keep on building off it.
No, I mean, I think I agree with all that. I think Houston has a lot of tough decisions to make, specifically with KPJ, with Christian Wood. Still got to see Usman Garuba hit the court. He's really had a very limited rookie season. And then they've got to figure out what they're going to do with guys like Eric Gordon, you know, Dennis
John Schroeder. Wall. I mean, John Wall basically will control a lot of what happens, I think.
What do you mean?
Really?
Yeah, I think for Wall, what's his buyout number? Right? Like, that's going to be, you know,
he doesn't have one yet, obviously.
I know. I mean, is he willing to take, a $20 million shave? I don't know.
I don't think so.
The only way I see him earning that back is basically in 2 years, right? A team would give him the $10 million mid level. I think there's going to have to be some closure to this, right? Like, we're not going to go through this. I don't think we're going to go through this again as far as year two of John Wall sitting out.
I think Houston would be prepared to enter that situation. I'm not convinced John Wall is ready to play ball the way, well, quote unquote, play ball the way that he has. So we'll see. I don't know. Do you think that he's going to make a fuss and make it more of a public situation?
I don't know. I think if
I'm surprised he hasn't already.
I think if he's not traded or if there's not a resolution, I think there could be, because now you're going into the second year of a guy who's basically, you know, on ice. And I think there was a point last year where he would have, I think the Rockets would have welcomed him back, but not as a starter. Like, I think if he would have, you know, if Steven Silas said, "Hey, we got 15 to 20 minutes for you," right?
This like is the Dennis what, Schroeder.
It's the role. Yeah, exactly the Dennis this Schroeder
is
role
what,
right now.
This is what we have. He'd be on the roster right now, but he views himself as a starter right now, and I think that's going to be the interesting part as far as who out there needs a starting point guard.
Well, there's not a trade market for him.
No, there's no trade market. I mean, you know, you basically going to have to take back what, like $38, $39 million in salary. I mean, they'll find the same, you know, resistance, you know, that, although I think John has a little more value than Westbrook in Los Angeles, right? Like, and that's the other thing too, is like, people are saying, why wouldn't you just trade Westbrook for Wall? And be like, well, you're going to be in the same position. Like, you're going to have to do a buyout anyway. You know, like, it's all the same unless you're getting a number one pick in 2027. Then,
well, the only way that Houston would do that trade is to get that 2028 pick. And I think that after July, I forget the date, at some point in July, I think the Lakers 2029 pick.
Yeah. Once the draft starts, actually, then you look ahead. So 2022 is no longer like everything gets pushed back. So now we start with 2023 and then 27 and 29 then are in play to be moved.
Have buyouts been around forever? Like, cause I feel like they've only been prevalent like the last 7 years or something.
Well, when in New Jersey, I think we're still paying Dikembe Mutombo for his buyout. I mean, that might've been the big, we acquired Mutombo in, we went to the finals and got swept by the Lakers. And when Shaq was dominant, Shaq and Kobe 4-0 sweep. And we had figured that we needed, we had Todd McCullough, who was a nice player, but we needed a down low big defensive player of the year. And we went out and got Mutombo and he went up, I think he broke his hand and we wound up playing San Antonio the following year with Duncan and Robinson. And he wasn't really much of a factor, and we wound up buying. Yeah, we bought him out that year. I think he had like $25 million left in his contract.
Oh my God!
I think the buyout market is probably one of the more overrated point of the season here. I think people get caught up with the names. I think some of it is more of a, just an insurance policy for teams. Like, you know, Dragic, Goran Dragic in Brooklyn is an insurance policy for Kyrie, you know, and for Ben Simmons. I mean, that's the, everyone lost their mind last year when Blake and LaMarcus Aldridge went to Brooklyn and Andre Drummond went to the Lakers and the system is broke and we've got to fix it and stuff. And, you know, Aldridge wound up retiring at the point because he had that medical condition. Blake had some good minutes here and there.
He was good last
Drummond,
year.
Drummond basically lost his, they didn't have a role basically, you know, when the playoffs started here. So they've been around, but I just think nowadays the names are probably a little bit more well known than they were in the past.
Let me ask you this. If you were given the opportunity to take over any job in the league, not named Milwaukee, not named, let's say, Brooklyn. Let's just say those two. What team would you take over? What would be the most fun for you to run and try to make it into a championship team?
Well, I mean, the Zach Kleiman in Memphis has already done a good job. So I'd hate to take over his job because I'd probably screw it up. So I mean, what they've been able to do there is pretty remarkable, right? I mean, it's you basically transition from the Zach Randolph, Mike Conley era,
and no Phoenix for you either.
Okay, and
that's too perfect.
You got Ja number two, right? Like, there's your foundation guy, right?
Yeah.
And then to be able to build through the draft with other parts, whether it be Desmond Bane at 30. When you make that trade with Boston, Dylan Brooks, De'Anthony Melton, you get a trade, Tyus Jones
Jaren Jackson.
Jaren Jackson, right? In the top five of the Steven. Like you've
hit on everyone.
They know who they are, right? Like they know what their identity is. Like they could have easily had cap space last offseason, but they parlayed it into like nine different trades and they got multiple seconds and it freed up some money for other things here. And they're only going to get better, I think. You know, I think it's going to be fascinating because there's a difference of being, you know, the eighth seed and playing Utah and having a, you know, hey, we stole a game, right? We got a good feeling now, man. Now you're going to be the two or three seed. You got a target on your back, man. There are expectations. Like losing in the first round in seven games is not, I don't want to hear, well, it was great experience, you know, to be in a position like, no, like your window is open. It's only going to stay open for so long. But what Memphis has been able to do is I think it's one of the great builds as far as organically how they, you know, they didn't cheat the system. They didn't go out and, you know, pay a guy, you know, from another team, $40 million. And so I think Memphis is, I think what they've been able to do is pretty neat. I think it would be interesting. You know, I mean, there's not much more to do except just kind of, I say, put the cake in the oven and let it bake a little bit, but they check all the boxes, you know, with their younger players, they've got veterans, they've got cap flexibility. They got a ton of draft picks from other teams and their own. So, they're a fun story.
So if you were to project with Memphis, because I always like to say, if you got this team that's growing and trending in the right direction, you kind of got to project out if they're going to be good enough at their peak ceiling, if everybody reached their full potential, if they're a real championship contender. Like I look at it, I don't think Jaren Jackson Jr. has that high of a ceiling.
Yeah.
Desmond Bane, I think maybe a CJ McCollum type. Maybe a borderline all-star. I think he can make an all-star game or two, but I think they're a conference finals max with the roster they have. Would you agree to that? Or
I do. I think it's going to be interesting when this game slows down because it does in the playoffs. I mean, it's just the reality of it. I saw it in New Jersey firsthand. I mean, we were this up and down team back in, you know, with Jason Kidd. And then when it gets to a grind in the half court, things change. So Who's another guy besides Ja? Like who's another closer on your team?
Right? Well, they got the direction like Phoenix was going, but then they added Chris Paul to make him that contender. Well,
they also need shooting. Memphis needs some shooting to bail them out at some points if they don't have that bona fide number two guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I thought when if Boston was going to, and they've had a great turnaround also, like, you know, Jaylen Brown, right? Like, push your chips to the middle in the offseason. That would be a great name to put with. They've got all the pieces to do it. I don't think, you know, Brown will be in play, but that's like, that's going to be the interesting thing, is if they lose in the second round and some of the things we're talking about right now resurface, is like, do you go out? And I don't know who that guy is right now, because we don't see that disgruntled, you know, all-star out there, you know, finding in that next piece. And it's hard. I mean, I said it last year when the Knicks, and Memphis is certainly ahead of where New York is, when New York lost and had a good year and lost to Atlanta in the first round, it's like, how do you go from good to great?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it is hard, man, going into that, getting into that next level where Phoenix is, or where, you know, we'll see what happens in the East with some of these teams that are kind of clumped together, but where, you know, we're a Western Conference Finals or an NBA Finals, it's hard. You got to get a little lucky to get, you know, to get to that step.
I also think a team like Utah has had difficulty doing that, despite having a Gobert and a Donovan Mitchell and adding a Mike Conley. They still haven't been able to take that jump from, hey, we're pretty good, to, hey, we are contenders. I mean, even when they were in theory a contender, they didn't prove to be last season, right? So it's tricky. Threading that needle is incredibly tricky. So,
but I think it's Zach, opening for, I think it's opening for Utah this year. I really do. I mean, not just Utah, not just Utah. I'm saying everybody. It depends how good Chris Paul gets.
I think, you know, Memphis, if he's still better, injured, I think Phoenix is better. I think Memphis is better. I think the Warriors are better.
Well, I picked Utah out of the West to get to the finals.
Are you still
ESPN?
How are you feeling about that pick, Bobby?
Not great. and I'm big on the continuity factor. I thought that, you know, certainly they've had some injuries too, but I just thought you kind of bring back the same group. And then when you add Rudy Gay and Whiteside, you know, to that mix, it kind of addresses some things from your bench here. I think, you know, I think Conley's got to be right. I mean, Mike Conley's got to be healthy and he's got to be right. Like, he can't be just an average point guard in the playoffs. I think that's going to be a big thing. And it's going to be interesting. Like, you know, we're trending towards probably a Utah Dallas first round, right? Like, there's a lot of pressure on both teams there. Like, Dallas hasn't been able to get out in two years in a row, right? Utah can't get past the second round.
Dallas hasn't gotten out since they won it all.
That's right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you are correct. And I mean, both teams, you know, what's waiting them is probably Phoenix, right? So, you know, that will be a challenge in itself. But yeah, it's going to be interesting as far as what the fallout in Utah would be as far as if this team doesn't get out of a first or even a second round.
So outside of the Phoenixes and the Memphis,
well, Zach, you hijacked me though.
We're
focusing on young cores.
Yeah, go for it. No, that's what I was about to ask, but go for it. What do you want?
So we discussed Houston at length, but what are some other teams in the mix in the league that have young cores that you're kind of keeping an eye out for? OKC, I don't know, Indiana, you could maybe consider Sacramento and Sabonis and Fox, or just who's on your radar?
Yeah, I mean, I think OKC is interesting with Gilgeous Alexander and Giddy. You know, that they'll add a couple more, you know, they've got all these draft picks here to add to that. I think Atlanta is fascinating for me, you know, like with Trey and
there's another team, by the way, with the discussion of getting good and then fumbling it.
Well, and Travis Schlenk, their GM, you know, basically was on record saying like, well, maybe I didn't do the right thing. You know, you get to an Eastern Conference Finals, you're a couple games away from the NBA Finals, and you dole out, you know, $300 million in contracts to Young, Herter, John Collins, Capella, you know, that group there. And that's going to, you know, you have DeAndre Hunter now up for an extension, right? That's another thing there is as far as, you know, you could be a luxury tax team. I always said that owners are willing to pay the tax, but not if you're a play-in team or losing the first round. Like, so how do you view the Hawks? Is there still upside to this roster? I think there is. I think the injuries have certainly played a big role in it, but, you know, defensively they went from, you know, in the teens, I think from an efficiency standpoint, now they're in the bottom three or bottom four. It's, you know, that's a little bit disturbing. So I think that's another team that's got all their guys got paid, right? Like it's different when you're making $8-9 million and you're on these rookie contracts. And now you got your money, you got your, so you know, what's going to be next there?
So OKC, would you, what would you do with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Because I personally think like the dude's experienced success, his rookie year with the Clippers. I mean, he's made the playoffs right away. And then he did it again when he got to OKC with Chris Paul. You have all these picks. I don't think the guy's going to want to sit on a terrible team another 2 years. I think you got to somehow get like even just a marginal move like a Miles Turner to help getting some winning pieces around there. I'm not saying go spend a lot of money by any means, but I'm just talking coherent basketball players, not the Pokus of this world trying to hit on these gems out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting too, because they'll be going into year three of this process, right? Like, you know, we've seen last year, this year, you know, and then they go into, you know, they go into, you know, they had such a great stretch of playoff teams, and now we're into year three of this rebuild, right? And what do you have to show for it so far? As far as, yeah, you've seen some good minutes from Trey Mann. We talked about Gilgeous-Alexander, Giddey. Like eventually you've got to turn the corner a little bit here, right? You can't be, you know, 25 and 57 for the next 5 years, or we'll be talking to you like Sacramento. I mean, that's just the reality of it, but they've got things that can get them better. Like they've got all these, they've got what, 19 first round picks in the next 7 years, including the potential of what, three or four this year. They've, you know, for them, I think drafting in the top three or top four this year matters. I think Sam Presti is one of the best at identifying talent, but can you find a guy in if you're sitting at six or seven again this year? Like that's going to be the challenge there. And they found, you know, they're basically trying to follow the blueprint of, you know, Durant, Harden, Westbrook, Ibaka, you know, that core where you basically grew it. You grew it organically. The hard part is that you're going to be going into year one of the Gilgeous-Alexander extension, right? So now they have a position to, from when the season ends to June 30th, they've got like $32 million in cap space, right? To go out and use it on something as far as either play or, you know, take back draft picks or do something there. Once July 1 kicks around, like that goes away, because Gilgeous-Alexander now comes in at like $30 million. And this fun team that all these trade exceptions and cap space and like, it's not there anymore. Right. So now they're just like everybody else, but with a lot of draft picks. And I just think I don't see it in their nature where they're going to go out and trade, you know, three first round picks for Bradley Beal. Like I don't see, that's not, you know, the aggressive side. So we're kind of in this waiting period where you better hope you draft right, and you better hope you develop. But on the other end, as you said, you've got, instead of a guy on a rookie contract in Gilgeous-Alexander, now you got a guy in a $30 million per year contract.
Yeah, that's tough. So what would you prefer to be in that situation? Or would you rather be in like Atlanta's situation where you got guys that have experienced success, but they're not happy the second year, it seems. I mean, and they're all just trying to grind out wins here and there.
Yeah. I mean, I think Atlanta, I mean, because I think you've seen what it could be from a year ago, you know, what going through that playoff, you know, run. And I know, you know, with Philly and, you know, certainly with Milwaukee, or do you want to grow it organically and basically, you know, have your imprints, you know, the Atlanta team is basically a kind of a win now team with three or four players under 25. You know, I think there's some upside. I think there's still some flexibility as far as movable parts there. And, you know, you're in every game, you know, you know, you're a top, you know, you're going to be at the worst, a play-in team here, or you're in Oklahoma City and you're just kind of waiting, right? Like you just don't know when that, you know, when the alarm is going to go off, when, you know, you are one of these teams in the, you know, top eight teams in the Western Conference.
Bobby, all NBA rookie, all rookie first team. Sorry. Who you got?
Well, I mean, I think when you look at it, I'm going to just go through the, um, Mobley, Green, Cunningham, Barnes. I don't think I'm not, and Franz Wagner in Orlando.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it is too.
Jalen Green, though, for sure.
Yeah, I think. I mean, he's been really good. You know, I mean, he's had a really good February. You know, I think I think the five guys, you know, those five guys there would be my guys.
I mean, the other guys you could say, I mean, Josh Giddey in the mix. I mean, yeah. You could say Shangoon in the mix. I mean, minutes wise is going to be a factor there, but I really
Pelicans
like,
fans would have you believe that Herb Jones should be there.
Well, he might, you know, it's funny. He might earn first team all defense and not first team all rookie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah.
It's so hard for me to put a bad player on all I mean, a bad player, a bad team guy on all defense.
I tell you what, though, I saw him. I saw him in person. I was there when they played Utah a couple weeks ago, and he is just so active. You know, and it's another thing, too. Like, we started this with the draft, and I was like, I want to, like, go on the roof and shout on the top of my lungs, like, it's okay to draft 22 and 23-year-olds, right? Like, it's okay. Like, I get it. Like, when you're picking up top and the upside appeal is there, and, you know, like, but, you know, sometimes if you're in the 20s, you can grab these guys. You don't right. have to wait until the second round. The kid in, you know, Iowa and Chicago, right? Like, a season.
I was going to say,
know,
he's got to be in the mix.
Yeah, quality, you know, quality backup point guard, but he goes to pick 38 in Chicago. So, you know, but I think, you know, I think all rookie will be interesting. I think all NBA is going to be interesting. I mean, that's going to be, a steel cage match as far as, you know, who winds up on, you know, each position there.
Do you think all NBA should be positionless?
I do.
Yeah.
If I don't have a vote.
Why is that?
I just don't like. I'm a people pleaser. Like, I don't want like the wrath of like agents and players and like. So I'm kind of neutral. I'm like Switzerland here. But if I was voting for all NBA, this is what I would do. I would vote Ja, Jokic, as a guard. Okay. Giannis, LeBron, and Embiid.
I just can't put LeBron on first team this year. I'm okay with second or third, but like for me, it's whether he's leading the league in points or not. I mean, a lot of those points have come in some terrible, terrible minutes and blowouts, but games played is the like, I'm a huge proponent of games played. And I mean, yeah, if you're 66 games and you're an all-time great player and you've done it year over year, yeah, that's fine. But like LeBron's played 54 games and there's been enough great players to substitute him. Sometimes it's just not your year.
Could you entertain Tatum over LeBron?
Absolutely.
Oh, I would.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, games played is big for me too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think
how do guys get their due if they don't, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd make a good case for Durant, but I don't think he's hit the games played either, right? Yeah,
like, no,
I think
40 something.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin is, you know, Kevin LeBron. I mean, they're two of the best players, right? But and that's going to be like, you know, like when we talk MVP too, like, you know, games played, I think means something. I think being on a team that wins means something. Like, but the crazy part is always like, there's no. Like, it's not like the league gives us a book and says, all right, these are the criteria you have to check off, right? Like, everybody is voting differently based on their own beliefs or how they do it or it's based on, some people rely heavily on analytics. Some people, it's the eye test, right? Just kind of what you see. And I think all NBA is, you know, fascinating just because there's such a domino effect on, you know, financially, there's a domino effect this year. What happens, like, Carl Anthony Towns is basically relying on Embiid and Jokic to go be first team.
Yes.
Right? Like forward center. So now that opens up a spot for him. You know.
But he's a lock to me on the third team at least.
I think so. Yeah.
Gobert's played 50 some games. And come on, you just watched watch those two play. Cat's been so dominant this year. Like,
I think he will. I think he will. And I think DeRozan's going to be, you know, I mean, this team's struggled. I mean, we're taping this pod on a Tuesday and they're getting their doors blown off. And I think I saw a stat. They're like 0-15 against teams, yep, the top three teams in each conference. Like, man, this team is going to be, they're trending towards they're at five right now. And
it's sad. They're such a good story for a little bit.
There'll be two games out of the play-in, you know, and I think DeRozan will be second or third team. I think probably second, maybe. I think Booker certainly will be up there. Another guy that's super max extension eligible.
But here's a question for you. And I think Booker doesn't get enough love, by the way, even for all-star voting and all that.
I got him six right now.
A guy playing at that level on the one seed by far on the best team record-wise in the league, usually gets a lot more consideration for all the awards. Based on what you just said, when I raised DeMar DeRozan, you mentioned that they've been struggling. And I would ask, how much do you factor that or weight that versus the fact that he's been durable, unless I'm remembering that incorrectly, and the fact that his team's performing better than someone like LeBron, who's played less on a worse team?
Yeah, I mean, is DeMar struggling or is the team struggling? Right? Like, both. I think that... yeah, I mean, I think that, but I also think that we have to look at it over the court. And I think what happens too is that we get to this point of the year and people like, we forget about what happened the first 50 games. Uh-huh. Like all of a sudden, it's just like, all of a sudden, everyone starts watching basketball. It's like I feel like that's like with the all-star voting, right? Like, well, did you watch the guy in the first 30 games? I'm just throwing out, like, he was terrible, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, why are we seeing the all-star game here? And I think, I think the team playing poorly as of late, I think that will weigh with people. I still think he'll be on probably second or third, third team, but we're not talking about him in the MVP conversation anymore.
Not anymore.
I mean, his name was hot for a while. Like, you know, I hear everyone, oh, he's the top three, you know, he had that stretch of, you know, game winning baskets. He's still a heck of a player, but, I think he's probably more towards, you know, probably second or third team.
Let me ask you this. I'm just going to say, between Joel Embiid and Jokic, I think they're about equal as players. I really do. I think they're as close as they get with one game at their absolute peak. I do think Jokic makes players better around him more than Embiid does. He's like one of literally five players in the league that does make players better around him all the time. And I personally think that eight games that separates them of games played, that's the deciding factor for me. Yes, only two players in the history or in the last 50 years of the MVP race have finished below a four seed. And so Jokic is in the seventh seed right now. It's so hard to give it to him. So that almost makes up a little bit of that eight games missed for me, but when you got players that close, I mean, you're splitting hairs here at all costs.
I am vehemently against handing out the MVP to a seven seed. But six here, or below is just absurd.
Here's my last argument for it is,
well, Westbrook got it that one year, right? Were they
exactly? He was a six.
He did, Bobby, and you could imagine how I felt about that. But
no, Harden deserved it that year, and so did like Kawhi or somebody. But
they were like 45 and 37. The Thunder were. Come on.
But MVP. Here's my last argument.
Post KD, right? It was when Kevin left the following year.
Yeah.
My last argument for
16-17. Yeah.
For Joker is, how do you evaluate that talent around him? Because I look at it, and yes, they're good fitting pieces. Okay, they got decent role players. They're not terrible players, but the best player is Aaron Gordon right now outside of him. And he's not even a top 70, barely a top 80 guy in this league. I look at Tyrese Maxey as a borderline all-star right now. Tobias Harris. Come on. Like,
oh, the supporting cast in Philadelphia is better based
that
on
matters
the
to me
the based on the injuries in Denver, you know, with no Murray, no Porter.
Yeah.
I saw them last Wednesday in Washington. And I think it's funny that people, you know, whenever you throw out something about him, people always say, well, he's one dimensional. Like,
he's gotten a lot better defensively.
I watched him on defense. Like, he competes. Like, you know, like,
is he the perfect a few times this year?
Yeah. Is he the perfect, you know, defense? No, but like him on offense, it's like, It's like going to the opera, man. Like, it's just like, it's beautiful. And you had, I think there was at one point in the game, you had Bryn Forbes, Austin Rivers, Gordon and Bones, I think were out there. I think they went like all guards and he was the only big, and you're looking at like, and they're up like 20 and he's got like 28, 8, and 8. Like, man, like, you know, I don't think people appreciate him enough. I really don't, based on, you know, he's almost a 7-footer that looks like he's out of shape, but he's not. But he's just so effortless. And I think he makes everybody around him. I mean, if they had someone else on their team, if Jokic was not, that team would be like
unreal,
like 15-60 right now or something like that. You know, I mean, he just, the MVP debate is, it's going to be interesting as far as it's basic. It's going to be on preference. Jason Kidd in 2002 finished second to Tim Duncan. And Jason was like Jokic.
Right. That's a great comparison.
You know, like, I mean, we had, I don't want my friend Richard Jefferson to be mad at me, but, you know, Richard and Kenyon in that group. Yeah. I mean, the talent was a little bit better, but like he elevated these guys. Like, so I don't know what the criteria is for MVP. Is it the most valuable player to your team? It's like the same thing with like we're going to like all of a sudden, I think it's funny. Like what coach, I know I'm changing the subject a little bit, but like coach of the year, right? Like
different criteria.
I see people like, man, like, Eric Spoelstra's got to be one of the front runners for coach of the year, or Taylor Jenkins and Memphis got to be the front runner or something. And I'm thinking like, well, does anyone watch what Monty Williams is doing in Phoenix? Like we just, because you have a team that went to the conference NBA finals, like all of a sudden we should eliminate them because these other teams were predicted to go, you know, in as the 6th seed and now they're the 2 seed. So I don't know what the criteria is for any of these here. And I think that's probably why there's so much of a debate when it comes out and then we find out who voted for who. And, you know, there are some people who watch more Celtics games or watch more Jazz games or watch more Rockets game. And they're maybe a little bit more biased towards that player.
Yeah, Monty Williams should have won it last year, to be honest with you. And I don't know why he didn't. I guess.
Well, that's the thing. Like, so if we're going to go buy off that feel good, right?
Then
like,
you give it to the Knicks, yeah.
Yeah, or the Sun. Well, I mean, Monty had every right just based on, I mean, shoot, that team hadn't gone to the playoffs in whatever, 12 years. And mm-hmm. you basically come in and you get the Chris Paul trade and everything, and you turn around that season here. And I don't know if hopefully he gets it this year, but I mean, I could see one of the voters looking at, you know, Ime Udoka in Boston and be like, hey, you know, 25-4 in the last 29.
But then they forget about his start to the year.
Well, that's the thing.
You got to be accountable for that too. You know,
all of the awards in the NBA are narrative driven, or they seem to be. And I think it's a problem. I think it really pisses fans off. And also, when you look at it in retrospect, you kind of like we're doing now. You're just sitting there like, how did that happen? Why?
Here's the thing. Like, and the league would never do it. Is like, maybe we have a committee of 20 people. Right. And that's their sole job. Right. As far as they are on the selection committee and they're the ones watching the 82 games. And we're not relying on a radio guy in Sacramento to vote for all NBA. Come on. Right.
Only watches Sacramento games.
I think part of it is, too, there's too many people that have a vote. I mean, I think that's
part, I like that.
I think that's just part of the problem, too.
It becomes an issue of groupthink, right? People are like, oh, I think the consensus is this, so I'm going to go with the consensus, you know? Westbrook, when he won it that year, the triple-double thing was like, oh my God, the triple-double thing. And then he does it again and no one cares, you know?
Yeah.
And he hit that crazy game winner against the Nuggets in the midst of the triple-double barrage. And when he hit that, as a Rockets fan, we all knew, we were like, okay, that's the moment.
Well, the other thing too is what happens is that, and we saw it 2 years ago when Milwaukee lost in the bubble in the second round, right, to Miami. Like, it's the MVP is a regular season award,
correct?
Right, like it's not what you do in the playoffs. So when Giannis loses in the second round, I know he got hurt in that series. Like everyone's like, well, he's not the MVP. Well, wait a minute. Like it's not what you did in the, and there's a separate award for that. And if we're going to judge that, then maybe we hold off on MVP voting and wait until the playoffs are over. And then we just do with that. But then, you know, guys, you know, who lose early could get and had a great 82 games pays a penalty for that. But yeah, it's, you know, we're going to go through and we're going to go. And Jason Tatum was right. I mean, he had a great point. He was on JJ Redick's podcast. And
yep,
he, yeah. I mean, he lost $36 million because of it, but don't blame the media because it's a collectively bargained rule as far sure. As far as all NBA and it can bump up your salary 30% here. I think if you're going to blame the media, blame it on the process, right? Blame it on, as we talked about, maybe there's too many people that have a say in this.
No, I appreciate that. And I do agree. I like the committee idea for sure. So we've gone the distance. Yeah, I appreciate you going deep with us here. And I got two quick hitters for you and we'll get you out of here. The first one being we're just talking about MVP. Pick one, Jokic or Embiid for the rest of their career?
Jokic.
Love it.
I think he's more durable. Embiid scares me. I know he's been healthy since everything that happened in his first couple of years, but I just think Jokic from a durability standpoint, like I would sleep better at night if Jokic is on my roster, and Embiid would probably keep me up a little bit.
I probably would agree. To...
Isn't Embiid like 28?
Yes, he is. 20.
How old is Joker?
26.
That also factors in for me. 26 yeah. is still like he's about to hit
27 to 28.
Okay, so he has just scratched the surface of his athletic prime.
Yep. MB just turned 28, young 28. So my other one, Bobby, was Cade Cunningham or Evan Mobley?
Oh, man. I certainly like what Cade's been doing since the All-Star break.
You're also allowed to pick Jalen Green. I'm just putting that out there.
You wouldn't even take him.
I didn't have that third option. I'm probably going to take Cade. I mean, I really do like Mobley, though. But I just like...
Easier to build around, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think he is a little bit easier to build around. Versatile as heck. You know, I think Mobley will be a really good player. I think Cunningham could be really special.
Love it. And now lastly, I know I said only two, but Marist is where you graduated. Same conference as St. Peter's, correct?
That's right.
So how much of a chance do they have?
Oh, they got a heck of a chance. I thought you were going to ask me, when are we going to see Marist in the tournament? I was like, never. I think, you watch them. And I grew up a Seton Hall fan. So I saw Shaheen play at Seton Hall back when he was
awesome
running
guy.
Point guard. And they've got great guard play. The sets he runs are incredible, right? I mean, it's kind of like almost like a Princeton offense a little bit here. They make free throws down the stretch. Size might hurt them against Purdue. I think they have a shot. I mean, I think they have as good a shot as any of these, you know, Florida Gulf Coast from, you know, way back when, or who was it last year? Oral Roberts, I think.
Yep.
As Shaheen said, they're all Jersey and New York kids. They don't, I mean, you know, they're not really
swag.
Yeah, they're not afraid of that the moment. So I think they have a chance.
Love it.
All right. Well, on that note, Bobby, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And we'll wrap this up. We will get this out most likely next week. So we'll shoot it over when we do. And I got a question for you when we get off real quick, if you're available. So thank you so much. We appreciate it. If there's anything you want to plug, go for it. And if not, we'll wrap this baby up.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Really appreciate it, Bobby. It was a really fun show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.